Well, there's a good number of reliability prediction methods, from simply guessing to engineering judgment to physics of failure models and analysis of field data and reliability block diagrams and so on. You can also get fairly sophisticated with Markov analysis or probabilistic risk assessments. The idea, though, is that it goes back to the what we learned in undergraduate statistics classes, if you were fortunate enough to have one, was that you shouldn't extrapolate beyond your data. So by doing reliability predictions, we are looking into the future. We're going beyond our own data to find out what will happen. And there's a lot of risk with that. So there's a handful of things we need to consider as we venture off into this unknown area. So as we look at doing a prediction, or we're being tasked to do a prediction, or we're proposing that it be included in our reliability program, you need to really understand when and why you would want to do that, and then also what are some of the caveats or considerations to keep in mind when you are considering that kind of a proposal or task. Some of the benefits are, is that it seems to be very obvious to me anyway, is to influence decisions. If I've got three different options available in our design process and we have a decision to make as to which approach to take, there may be considerations of cost, of complexity, of probability of solving the design issues, and so on. But one of them may well be reliability. Which one's inherently more reliable than the other ones? So whatever prediction method we use, if we can sort out and justify the relative reliability merits of the three different options, that can significantly add to the ability for the team to make a decision. We also see predictions commonly used in safety and safety protocol or safety certification type programs, where they're looking for what's the relative risk of failure. In crossing certain thresholds may require either a safeguard or a fail-safe or fault-tolerant type design, whereas others may be just as long as it fails safely, but it provides a prioritization as which areas to look at. I mentioned warranty in a previous lesson, but there's plenty of other business decisions and which have financial impact that we need to have decent estimates of what the future goals or future reliability performance is going to be. And finally, it also highlights and prioritizes for us areas that we need to make improvements. What's the weakest link in our project? It is an area that may need some more emphasis or more design work or another breakthrough in order to really make some improvements. So let's take a look at each of the stages in the development lifecycle and just cover real quickly what kind why we would do it and what tools we may use. So concept stage is we don't have a prototype yet. We've got a series of ideas. So which ideas are inherently more reliable than others is a key element of this. Plus, what are the risks? At the concept phase, what's the list of unknowns and how much is it going to, what's the scope of sorting out the reliability equation if we follow that particular path? Now, we can use our historical data, our previous products or parts count or stress count analysis if we can make some educated guess as to the number and type of components being used, and then possibly rely on industry data if we have access to relevant information for what we're trying to study. But concept stage is pretty rough, and our predictions will be very inaccurate, but it's the relative comparison oftentimes that's the most important piece. Now, once we get into the design and development of our products, then it's really about feedback to the design team so they can make good decisions. They may be considering different vendors. They may be considering different design architectures and so on. But it also gets useful for us is we need to have an idea not only of what's likely to fail, but what failure rates are we trying to evaluate in our test planning. Do we need to detect a part per million defect rate or a 10% defect rate, which would dramatically change the nature of the testing we do? we can get information from our own test data, from vendors, and from a range of different analysis techniques. And it's often done at a finer resolution than at the concept phase, where it's really the big idea. Once we start production, the idea here is to really take a look at focusing on the areas that contribute to field failures that come from different sources of variability, whether it's from our manufacturing process, from, say, parts obsolescence or component changes or design up improvements, for example, and making sure that we don't introduce more reliability issues, or just to maintain our warranty estimates and predictions. We can also use it to take a look at did the improvement we put in place actually work or not? So predictions can help us understand where we're going and make a lot of these comparisons. The results come from our test data, from customer data, and from capability and analysis. Now, once we get the product out into the field, we'll call it here the deployment stage, then we're really looking at the predictions as setting up the framework for, as we track warranty, well, are we on target or not? Are we as expected? But we can also use it to take a look at, well, how many spares do we need? What kind of repair teams and number of repair benches, for example, do we need? And we can also use it to look for surprises. Did the product work as expected? And what did we learn by what we missed and what we got right? The data is obvious, comes from the field. It comes from our returned products and customer complaints, and in some regards from our repair facilities and field technicians. The idea is that the better our data and the better our understanding of the failure mechanisms involved, the better our predictions. Next, we'll take a look at, even with the best of data, there's still going to be some uncertainty.